5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
All-new Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening, one and all. It should have been some applause there, but I don't know where that went. It is the new Panic Room episode 105, and it's which means it's obviously a Thursday, 9:30 Central Time. So, yeah, welcome, dear listener. It's been a week. It has been a week. I don't know where. It seems like we were just doing this yesterday, unless we were doing this yesterday. And I'm sort of, this is Friday, and I'm talking to myself. But could happen. It will happen one of these days. I know it's just been, it has been. So I tell you what, and I have missed her, and I think we've all missed her in the past 7 days. So we're going to bring her on. We're going to bring her on now. Hello.
Hi, I was I was waiting on the banjos. I'm kind of used
oh,
to
hang
that.
On, hang on, hang on, hang on. I even forgot this, didn't I? Well, get banjo.
Like
yeah, if you want the banjos, we can put the banjo. That's my favorite bit, actually.
You know, I'm so excited for the show tonight that I didn't even bring a glass for my wine. I just brought the bottle. I mean, that's...
You're just swigging it out the bottle like a trooper.
Yes,
well done, you.
Yes.
I'm impressed.
So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun show tonight with my wine.
Good. Oh, so what? Tell me. Oh, let's do it properly, shall we? Let's do it properly.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So, hey, what is new, pussycat?
The bad part is I was just going to ask you what was new because, you know, I didn't write it down and I have no notes. I know, it's horrible.
Sorry, If we got any cheesier, it would be like a cheese shot. For any aficionados of Monty Python out there, and I know you're out there, the cheese shop sketch has to, and I'll see if I can dig it out, actually, see if we're allowed to play it. It's one of the best Monty, because everybody raves about the dead parrot sketch. The cheese shop sketch is absolute genius. Second only to the Eric the Half a Bee sketch, but cheese shop sketch.
Yeah.
If you look, it'd be on YouTube. Find it. I mean, it's just absolute. Cause the if you like listening for names of cheeses, and I know I do, it's great.
Of course, yeah.
It's great when Venezuelan beaver cheese. It's just so great.
Wow.
And I'll bet it probably is actually a cheese. It probably is one. But hey, so what is new? What has been going on since last week?
I thought that's where you come in. That's where you were going to tell us all what was new because I don't know.
Well, do you know, I've had my head down this past week. I've been absolutely not head down. My head down working.
No, right. That means neither one of us know what's going on. Is that what that means?
That's what I was building up to, Xtine. I haven't got a clue. I've kept up with good old Donald, with the Trumpmeister General. A police report. Yes, he is still a complete tit. did you see his latest one? He was... I don't know what the event was, and he is the F-35 aircraft, and he actually it's a stealth bomber. It is invisible to radar. I mean, whatever they do with it to make it invisible to radar. He thinks that he's genuinely invisible.
No, he doesn't.
He was doing this presentation. This lady who works for Lockheed who actually make these things, and he was saying, you know, they are invisible, right? You know, yeah, and it's you muppet, you muppet, they're not invisible. No,
just no. I'm picturing the Wonder Woman's, you know, the invisible, what, she have like a jet or something?
It was invisible jet, which was a bit silly because you could still see her, but I forget which James Bond, one of the recent James Bond, the Daniel Craig ones, he had an Aston Martin DBS that was, and they made it invisible by means of cameras and mirrors the science behind it made some sense. And of course, there's Harry Potter's Cloak of Invisibility, you know, which is a real thing. So, obviously, and the man, the level of, what's the word, the level of ignorance in that man is, just when you think he's reached the pinnacle of pig ignorance, he manages to just overstep that, you know, I mean, you know, there's the old slip of the tongue, etc. I remember that many years ago, Ronald Reagan was introduced Princess Diana. This is how long ago it was. This is before Paris, obviously. Introduced Princess Diana as Princess David. Now, like that, I guess, could just be a nervousness, slip of the tongue, whatever. But Trump, every time he opens his mouth, he's just shite. He just pours from him, and I think the thing that I guess, upsets me is when he's so unstatesmanlike. You know, take away personalities, whatever. He's so unstatesmanlike. He's not a good speaker. He's not a good orator. He's like a very, and I've been on the stand-up circuit, and I mean, I'm not the best stand-up comedian. I will be the first to admit. But he's like a very, very bad stand-up comedian.
But he thinks he's good. That's the thing. Is that
those,
he thinks he's good. I think he does.
Those are the worst ones. The ones, they laugh at their own jokes. They think they're brilliant.
Yes.
They don't take criticism. They just think they're the donkey's dick, you know, and they're not. You know, I think that probably the common thread between guys like that and Donald Trump are that they refuse to be told. It's like we come across writers, you know, in our job that you know, they'll ask you, read my story, and the minute you criticize it, they get pissy.
Yep. Yeah.
And they get
definitely.
Defensive and well, okay, look, if you wanted me to pat you on the head and say yes, it's the best thing you ever read, fine, just tell me and I'll do that for you. However, I did. Anybody who has worked with me, and there are some people who have worked with me in the past who just don't speak to me anymore for some reason, you know. And the first thing I say is, look, I will be brutally honest. Yeah, I'm not going to sit and read this. Take 20 minutes of my life to read a short story. Just to tell you, it's brilliant. If it's not, you know, I am always constructive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't just say, well, this is
you
rubbish.
Are. I remember distinctly, I did that. I shared something with you and, you know, you came back with, tell me what you liked about it. And then, of course, what you didn't like. And it was a perfect,
well,
and, you know, I don't like criticism. I don't think anybody does. But if you want to get better, you will take it and you will
you have to take rejection.
Yep.
You have to take criticism is how we grow as writers. I'm still learning day in, day out, you know, because, you know, I welcome criticism. I want that. Pretty. I want it back. I don't just want to, it's brilliant, just carry on. You know, I mean, that's how we develop. But Donald Trump, unfortunately, has that personality. He's got this narcissistic personality that will not allow him. He thinks he is above reproach, and he's not. The man is.
Definitely.
I mean, you read the report. I've been reading the Wolf book, you know, and the guy is just, you know, I don't think he's stupid. He's ignorant. He doesn't watch news. He doesn't read things. He just doesn't listen. He's surrounded himself by sort of a handful of staff. He's only got a fraction of the White House staff that he should have. He's surrounded himself by yes men. No one will challenge him because you've seen what happens to people who challenge him. They're gone.
Yeah.
And then they're trash.
Yep.
And publicly humiliated, and they're gone. And that is no way to run a government. You know, it's just...
Nope.
It is terrible. But hey-ho, on the bright side, I don't think there is one.
Okay.
I'm just trying to think of it. Do you know, I'm just trying to think what I've been watching on TV. I'm trying to get into season 2 of Sense8, which was good. I've actually been catching up on some older British comedies. There's a very surreal show called Snuffbox, and there's a great English comedian called Matt Berry, and he's got look him up on YouTube. He was in his most recent series called Toast of London, and he crops up in all these different, you know, he starts in little bit parts until he's got his own show finally, but he's got his gorgeous, I would love to hear him read, you know, to do audiobook narration. He's got a gorgeous, gorgeous velvet voice, and he's a very funny guy. I mean, look him up on YouTube. So I've been sort of catching up on. So it's not really. So if I talk about them now, then people think, oh, well, I don't know what those are. You know, it's not American. I'm not going to watch that. If it's not Doctor Who, I'm not bothered. So I'm not going to bother. So there.
You know, I took some time for myself a couple of days ago, and I watched the pilot episode of Sharp Objects. Have you seen that, or do you know? Yeah.
No, I've heard good things about it. Is it good?
Yeah, I can't wait to watch more. I'm hoping that in the next couple of days I can knock out a couple more episodes. I think there's like four now. And I was impressed. I really liked it. I wanted more. So I'm excited about it. And, you know,
Well, that is good. That is good. So, what is it about? Is it it's a supernaturally type thing?
No, it isn't. It's
bugger.
But like
wait.
Okay. Do you remember the movie Gone Girl, right? It was like the psychological thriller type thing, you
know.
That
was a great film.
It's written by the book was written by the same woman who wrote Sharp Objects, that's what drew me to it because I, you know, so now I really don't know too much about it because I didn't read the book, but I wanted to. But when I saw it was by her, I was like, okay, I got to check this out, and it caught me right away. It grabbed my attention. I mean, I did see somebody post yesterday, one of my Facebook friends, a horror writer, that he watched the first episode and he thought it was slow and he didn't really too much care for it. But everything else that I've seen, people are saying how good it is. So, you know,
I
guess not everybody likes it, but, you know, so far, I can't wait. I do. I can't wait to watch more. So I'm hoping that, you know, if I have some time and I'm not working really, really, really hard, I can, you know, get to an episode or two.
Well, you should be. You should be working hard. That's the whole point.
I know.
You know? And the other, because that's on Hulu, I believe. I think the other one, I don't know if it's on Hulu or Netflix, is Castle Rock, which is a series based in the Stephen King universe. Again, it's one that I've made a note to. I've made a note to watch. So that too could be good. That too could
definitely
be good. So, I
have too many things
going
on at once, so I'm kind of scattered as it is. So,
Summer is a bit of a sort of black hole TV-wise. I mean, I tend to DVR things and set things up over the winter months to watch it because some of it, they just put all the repeats on and all the crap on and all the rest of it, you know. Obviously, now we're sort of getting sort of approaching fall rather frighteningly. The good stuff starts coming back out, so you know, stuff to look out for there. I mean, I've been catching up on some movies, and the daughter and me are looking forward to the Slenderman movie, which is on.
Ooh,
I think the 20.
Really? Did you watch the documentary about that? That was spooky.
I did not. No, it's the last Friday in August. I know it's the Friday just before she goes back school, so that's a date we're gonna go see, watch the Slenderman movie. So but that'll be good.
So I
turned up at as usual at 9:10. What is going on? What is on the show tonight, Xtina?
I am so excited. We have author Jeff C. Stevenson to talk about his book, The Children of Hydesville, which, you know, I have ties to the town of Hydesville, and I'm just excited to talk to him. I have some personal experiences about the house that, you know, his story is centered around. So I'm excited. I'm super excited. Yeah.
Well, we always say, you know, I of course I had the opportunity to read the book because we published it, you know, so which puts us in a privileged position, and obviously and it was amazing when you again, we're not going to spoil it as we get into the show, that you have a personal connection to the story, which is fantastic. And I'll tell you what, we could talk about it, what could we do, we could bring on the guy who actually wrote it. What do you think?
We could do that, yeah.
He's probably the best person to speak to about it. So I'll let you introduce him, Xtina.
Okay, here is Jeff C. Stevenson. Push the button.
Jeff, are you there, sir?
Hello from New York.
Hello. Hi there. And just Xtina, you don't have to tell me to press the button.
Thanks so much for talking about Trump right away because we lost half our audience. So I appreciate that.
I tell you something, Jeff. I mean, I'm here in Texas, where you know, being anti-Trump is sort of higher on the list than being an Islamic fundamentalist. So I'm a bit of a marked man, actually.
So you said you're calling, yeah, you're calling from New York, and you know it was so cool when I saw like even you know even phone numbers like 315. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's where I grew up, and I don't know. I'm just so terribly excited to talk to you and you know talk about the house and the town and everything. And I think we have Tracy that she is the caretaker of the. What is it, the Fox Memorial House or something? We have her on the line to talk to us, don't we, Jeff?
Yes, I hope
we do.
She's there.
We can bring her on any time you want.
I think we should. Yes, yes.
Shall we bring her now?
Yes, we should.
You are the boss. So this is Tracy Lee Murphy, who's caretaker of the Fox Memorial Park, which obviously has. Big connections with the story with the foxes. So here we go. Let's bring Tracy in. Tracy, are you there?
I am here, live from New York.
Everybody's in New York. It's all going on in New York.
It's very quiet in the country.
Yeah. So you're actually in the. You're not in the city of New York. I mean, for me, New York is the city. I mean, because obviously I'm from England. So you say New York, and I imagine the city, but there is more to it than that, obviously.
Yes, we're upstate New York, so we're in between the cities, and it's very quiet where I live. And I have a sister-in-law and her husband that live in Brighton, England.
Oh, Brighton! Well, you know, I had some wild. Brighton is a terrific wild night out. I had a few in my day. I had a few. it's a great town, actually. It's Brighton, just right there on the south coast. It's brilliant.
Yep.
Love it. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Love Brighton.
Yeah.
Although to be fair, the beach. Everybody's talking about Brighton Beach and what have you, and it's just all pebbles. It's big pebbles.
It's
a beach. It's a bit disappointing, but great place for night out.
I love hearing your accent, Tracy. It reminds me of home. You sound just like both of my aunts. And I think because I've been away from the area since I was like 19, I, you know, totally don't have the accent anymore. But seriously, you sound just like both of my aunts, and it's so cool. Now, where do you live, actually?
I live on Sand Hill Road, which is off of Hydesville Road. And I'm only like 5 minutes from the Fox property.
Wow. I lived in Newark most of my childhood. I lived in Newark, but my mom actually lived right across the street from the Hydesville, from the Fox sisters' house. And And then I had a friend of mine who lived in another one of the other houses that was really close to it, like right across the street as well. And, you know, she had the stories of, you know, seeing candles, and, you know, flickering and stuff like that, and going back and forth when there was absolutely nobody who lived there at the time. And, you know, of course your mind can try to make up, you know, reasons for it and say, well, it could be some kind of reflection or, you know, even kids who could have gotten in the house or something like that. But at the same time, it's totally creepy. You were going to tell us.
It earned its reputation as the spook house.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was when I was growing up. We always talked about it, and it was like, you know, dares and stuff like that, you know, going into the house and, you know, the stories that you would hear. Were you going to tell us a little bit of the history of the house?
Sure, yeah. You know, Hydesville was named after Dr. Henry Hyde. He came here to Hydesville in 1814, and his intention was to practice medicine, but when he got here, he realized, you know, how sparse the population was, and so he built a tavern, and that's how he financed all of his land buying. So as he brought in more money, he would go around the countryside and buy all this land and then build these houses and sell or use them as rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually before the Fox family lived in one of his rentals, there were other families that lived there as well.
Now, was there any sign or anything of supernatural goings on before the Fox sisters?
Well, the story is that there was a family by the name of Bell that was living in the house, and they had a young girl that was staying with them, and a peddler showed up one day and was giving them an in-home shopping experience. He carried a tin pack. It had everything, you know, that you could get in the store, but because you lived in the country, it was difficult to get into the town. And so he had things like yarn and wool and needles and thread and thimbles. And so Mrs. Bell and this young girl, her name was Lucretia, they went through his pack, and Lucretia did not have any money, but she was going home in a few days, and so she asked the peddler if he would come over to her father's house, and that way she could purchase the items that she had picked out using her father's money, and he agreed. And so it was later that afternoon that they took her home. They actually took her home a little earlier than she expected, and she returned, you know, after the weekend, but was very upset because the peddler never showed up. But Mrs. Bell was very happy to show off all of the things that she had purchased. It was later that night that Lucretia was in the basement, and she fell into a rather large hole. And when she yelled out, Mrs. Bell told her she was being silly and it was rats digging in the cellar. The family did not stay very long. They started hearing strange noises, sounded like someone was knocking on the door, and they would go to the door and look, and no one would be there. Lucretia requested to go home to her parents, and she did. The Bells stayed for a little bit longer, but their health started to decline, and they left. They moved out. And then, of course, the Fox sisters and their family moved in. It was about November of 1847.
Just thinking of, you know, hearing noises, and, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, was the house just always evil, or, you know, something like that's what I wonder, you know, and it's definitely something that, you know, a haunted house story is built on, and it's just so creepy. I mean, and then there was even more coincidence when, you know, I work as an editor at Hellbound, and that's, you know, the publishers of the book Children of Hydesville. And, you know, I hadn't thought about, you know, Hydesville or the Fox sisters in, like, forever. You know, I really hadn't. So when I, you know, I get this book and I open it up and it says The Children of Hydesville, and I remember thinking, that's really strange, you know, but who knows? There could be like a million, or not a million, but there could be like a whole bunch of towns out there named Hydesville. So I was like, whatever. And then as soon as I started reading, you know, it's talking about the Fox sisters, I'm like, there's just no way. This is too spooky to be just a coincidence. Like, really.
Right.
And I hear you laughing, Jeff. But
Xena, some of what you wrote with Tracy, because it was such an odd coincidence. So it made the whole thing kind of fascinating.
It sure does. I mean, you know, I grew up hearing so many different stories, stories that my mom would tell, and, you know, other friends, and, of course, the kids in school would talk about it. And it's just so totally creepy. It really is. And then, you know, Tracy, with knowing the history of the house, like, how many times did this house catch on fire and burn down?
Oh, it's been terrible. Well, the original house was moved. There was a man by the name of Benjamin Bartlett who came. He was from Pennsylvania, and he wanted to buy the property and the house, but for some reason he wasn't allowed to buy the property. So he bought the house and he took the original house apart and they moved it to Lilydale and he had it put back together and restored. In 1925 or 52. Sometimes I get my dates messed up, and it's late here. But they, the house was in Lilydale, and there was a medium by the name of Flo Cottrell. She was a rapping medium, so that was her specialty, and she was the caretaker of the original home. And somewhere in the early morning, the house caught on fire, and the only thing that survived was the Fox Family Bible, the peddler's tin pack, and one of the boards that was above the doorway that said spiritualism originated here.
Oh, that is
and cool. A tea kettle, right? Was there a tea kettle left over, or is that from another fire?
I'm not really sure. I'm not sure on the story of the tea kettle. We don't know if it belonged to the Fox family or if it belonged to Miss Cottrell. I'm not really sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I know it just made its way back. Someone donated it to the museum, but I don't know the significance. You know, I don't know if there's a history with the Fox family per se. I'm not sure. I'm looking into that one.
Well, one thing I thought was fascinating is how I came across Tracy. Is she's got a great Facebook page that about the Fox sisters and the Hydesville Memorial. And Tracy, can you just share what that memorial is? That it's part of the foundation of the actual house, correct?
Correct. The we have preserved the original foundation of the Fox Cottage from 1814, and it is in an enclosure that has windows on every side of the building, so anyone can come to the building and look inside. The only way to get in is through me. I have a key, and I'm pretty particular, but you know, the whole key is to preserve this great site because, you know, this is where modern spiritualism originated through the Fox sisters and their communication with the spirit that they came to know as Charles Rosna, the peddler.
Now, Tracy, have you had any personal experiences in the house?
All the time.
Nice. Tell us about them.
Well, you know, it was interesting because the property sat for a long time. And when they moved the house, they just kind of, you know, they left things open. A lot of people didn't realize, you know, what was there. And in 1968, there was a man by the name of John Drummond, and he came from Canada. He became an American citizen, and he built an exact replica of the Fox Cottage over the original foundation, and he lived in that house. So you could go there any time, day or night. He would let you in. He would talk to you about Hydesville and the Fox sisters and pretty much any subject, really. And he was a very interesting man, and I always say he's the original caretaker because he did take care of, you know, the property. Unfortunately for him, in 1988, he was putting wood in his wood stove, and a spark came out and started the house on fire. And so... you know, he was going to come back and he was going to rebuild, but he ended up passing away, not from the fire, but from other things. And then the town actually came back in the early 90s, and they did a controlled burn and took the rest of the replica down, which personally I thought was horrible because they don't realize what they have. You know, we have a lot of old buildings, and, you know, Newark is famous for urban renewal, so if it was old, we knocked it down.
Right.
That was the way it was. And, you know, you just, you can't get that back. And unfortunately, when they moved the house, you know, they didn't know the house was going to catch on fire, but that's something else that we've lost. There was a spiritualist camp on the adjoining property, but that also burned down in, like, 1954. So there's a huge, huge thing with fire there. And so we don't allow open flames. We don't allow candles. We don't do any of that stuff. And you just never know. You never know. But the enclosure is there to protect the original foundation. And it's been there for 20 years now. We are all donations. You know, it's just, it's a really cool place. They've turned it into a nice park. The lawn's been, you know, reseeded, and there's no more flooding. It's just, it's a great place to go.
Well, when you were talking about John, when you mentioned him and stuff, that made me think of the piece that I wrote that was included in Jeff's book. And, you know, would you guys mind if I took a couple of seconds to read? I tried to make it a little shorter than it originally was, just for sake of time, and I included, like, anything that I thought was, like, you know, the most important. So would you care if I read that?
Oh, go ahead.
Now, you would know that, of course, as soon as I said that and I went to the document, that it would, like, freeze up and everything. Okay. So.
Excellent. It's just all these spooky goings on, isn't it? The Fox sisters are sort of reaching out to you.
Stop. That's not funny. Okay. And some of this will be redundant a teeny tiny bit just because I mentioned it already. But it starts out, a spooky concurrent. Truth really is stranger than fiction. I work as an editor for Hellbound Books. A few days ago, I received a new editing assignment, a book called The Children of Hinesville by Jeff C. Stevenson. I've never met Jeff. I had not even heard of this author before, which is not so unusual in my line of work. I immediately recognized the name Hinesville, where the story is set, and the memory of the Fox sisters' house sprang to mind. It couldn't be the same Hinesville. I mean, what are the odds? There must be a number of towns across America sharing the same name. Writers frequently write about fictitious towns, right? So I started reading, which quickly resulted in a cold chill running down my spine. Right in the first paragraph, he writes, "The Fox sisters and their family, however, were very real, as is most, but not all, of what I've included in the story about what occurred in Hinesville in 1848. This goes way beyond a freakish coincidence. It borders on the paranormal. Here's a little family history. Before I was born, my parents lived in a tiny little cottage in the small town of Hinesville on the outskirts of Newark in upstate New York. Directly across the street from their cottage stood a house with, to say the very least, a very interesting past. In the mid-1800s, a family with three sisters lived in the house, and even back then it had a reputation for being haunted. The family was often frightened by unexplained sounds. The three sisters began claiming to be mediums and were apparently responsible for the creation of modern spiritualism. According to my mother, John, the owner of the house at the time, was a bit of a hermit. He was also rumored to be a Satanist. She talked of visiting his house a few times and of all the books on the occult she found there. One day, John showed up at her doorstep, bearing a cookbook and a jar of honey. He told her to use the recipes in the book and to cook with the honey, or her child would be born with bad blood. My mother was taken aback. Although she was pregnant, she had told no one, not even my father. Still, she paid little mind to the ramblings of an old, very odd man and ignored his advice. I was born prematurely and was honest, which required me to have a complete blood transfusion shortly after birth. So that was how I got my start in life. When I was growing up, the house was the talk of late-night slumber parties where we would try to scare each other. We would tell stories about seeing flickering lights in the window and hearing noises we couldn't explain. When I was about 15, a friend and I got up the nerve to go into the house. I remember my heart beating out of my chest as we giggled like we were insane. Everywhere around us, there were books strewn all over the floor, books on the occult and Satanism. They were charred. I remember picking one up and how it smudged my fingers with black soot. I remember how thick and heavy the atmosphere was, and I remember hearing noises from deeper inside the house. noises that made my friend and I run frantically for the door and not stop until we were far enough away where we felt safe. I remember looking back at the house and thinking that I saw flickering lights in the window. Close to 30 years later, I have children of my own. From time to time, the Fox sisters' house would come to mind, and I would wonder just exactly what it was I felt in that place and what exactly I had heard and seen. So what type of coincidence is required for Jeff C. Stevenson's book to arrive on my desk? There are at least 10,000 horror writers trying to land a publishing deal in any given year. The U.S. has more than 50 book publishers that publish books in the horror genre. There are several editors who work for Hellbound, and yet this story managed to find its way to me. Weird, right? The end.
Beautifully read. And she read that with just one breath.
I
know, I just one breath.
I was trying to go slow.
Tracy, I had a question about John Drummond. I think that's who Athena was referring to there.
Yeah.
Well, one thing about him that I thought was fascinating, when he was, if I've got this right, Tracy, when he was restoring the house, since it didn't exist, he used postcards and old photos of the house to try to rebuild it. But is it true he did it with his own money and it took him like decades to begin to build it?
I'm not sure how long it took him to build it, but he did use his own money. He would go around. He specifically made sure that he used period wood. I mean, it was literally an exact replica of the cottage, right down
to... And a real
labor
of love, too, right? Because he had such a passion.
Absolutely. You know, he had never heard of Hydesville. He didn't know why he was here, other than he felt that he had had a calling and that, you know, that particular area was a crossroad for him. And, you know, a lot of people thought he was crazy and, you know, he was a goofy looking kind of guy. I mean, he always wore a white t-shirt. He always had these khaki pants on and he had like this crazy white hair. So, you know, when you saw him, you know, it was like, oh, wow, he's an interesting kind of guy. But when you got to know him, you know, you would realize that the man knew a lot about a lot. And religion was his passion. And he loved the Reagans. I don't know why, but he loved the Reagans. And he would write them letters and invite them to the house for tea.
Wow.
Now, I'm sure they never came because they never heard of it, but...
You don't have any evidence from your background about Satanism or anything, or what's your response to that? Because I know when the Fox sisters first heard the rappings, from my research, and you and I have shared a lot of the documents I found, I think they first called the spirit Mr. Splitfoot, referring to Satan because they weren't sure if it was a satanic force or a good spirit. And so
right.
It seems to be... A confusion online between, you know, Satanism and demons and spirit. And so did you have any evidence or do you know about if he had any possibility with Satanism or he might have just had a book about the occult? Or do you know anything about that?
You know, a lot of people and even spiritualists, we have tried to go back and see, you know, where did the term Mr. Splitfoot come from? And you will have some people who will say, no, they didn't say that. And other people will say, yeah, they did say that. For them being in, you know, they were very devout Methodists. That was
right.
Their religion. And so, you know, with the girls being so young, their mother, when they first arrived in the house, their mother said, this house is haunted. So,
wow.
You know, for the girls, you know, when they started hearing these noises and they tried to play it off, I mean, you know, it went from the time they moved in until March 31st when they finally had the breakthrough. But, you know, some people will say that, you know, they said, Mr. Splitfoot, do as I do. Now, Mr. Splitfoot was just, it was just another name for the devil because they believed in their religion that there was, you know, there was good and evil, and God and the devil. And the devil mm-hmm. had the body of a man and the legs of a goat, which has a split mm-hmm. foot. And so that's where the term split foot came from. But as far as satanic rituals, or if Mr. Drummond was into the occult, I honestly, I don't believe he ever was. He was interested in everything. He knew, he was very knowledgeable. And, you know, I just think it was one of those things. It's really difficult when we talk about the Fox sisters, because I feel like they, you know, they were persecuted in their own time, and mm-hmm. sometimes they're still persecuted, you know, because of the town and the village. You know, they don't really want to recognize that they're out there, and you know, a lot of people fear what they don't understand. And I tell people, you know, I'm a spiritualist. I've been a spiritualist for 30 years. We don't do anything different than anybody else in any other church. We sit, we stand, we kneel, we pray, we sing, you know, we do. We just, you know, we're lucky enough that we can get messages from spirit.
Well, it's fascinating because that area up there, Hydesville and so on, it's called the Burnt Over District.
Absolutely.
And yeah, because I think it might have been Charles Finney, an evangelist from back then. And they had so many spiritual revivals up there and so many evangelists and preachers going to the area mm-hmm. over and over again that he finally said it's burned out. It's just like you don't need to go up
right.
there and preach anymore. Everybody's converted. So it was a very religious, Christian-based religious area, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, you have your, you know, Wayne County is famous for the Shakers, the Quakers, and
yeah.
the Moneymakers. We also have our Mormons, you know, and all that stuff was going on in the 1800s. So, you know, spiritualism was already huge in England. So that's, you know, there's spiritualism, and then there's modern spiritualism. And I think they modernized it because it was here in America. You know, and with all the controversy that the two girls had, it was just a tough life, and it wasn't something that their mother wanted for them. You know, she would pray, you know, God, please take this away. We don't want this. They don't want this gift. It's not a gift. You know, so until they really came into their own and realized, hey, guys, we can talk to spirits, and it's not just this guy that was killed in our basement. You know, we can talk to other spirits. And, you know, it's just like any other thing. You get people who believe and people who don't, and that's what makes everything so wonderful, because if we were all the same, we'd be very boring people.
Definitely.
I've got
one
quick paragraph, Christina, about showing how quickly spiritualism spread, and this is from the Children of Hydesville. And it's real short, and this is from the research I got, Tracy. And it says that 5 years after the documented Hydesville rappings, there were no fewer than 30,000 mediums. By the end of the 1850s, table rapping had become a nationwide craze. The New Haven Journal reported that there were 40 families in upstate New York who claimed to have the same gifts as the Fox sisters, and there were more than 100 spirit mediums in New York City alone. Eventually, millions of people worldwide, including Thomas Edison and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, had accepted spiritualism's central tenet that the human spirit survives death and can communicate with the living. So it's amazing to think back in the, you know, 1850s that this spread so quickly, you know, worldwide, and very well-respected men and women, you know, believe the tenets of it, even in this heavily religious area, which, like you were saying, Tracy, didn't endorse this experience or encourage it. They actually persecuted the family for it.
Right, yeah. And, you know, in 1888, when Maggie Fox made her confession, so to speak, that, you know, that her and her sister had faked this whole thing, you know, there was a big divide. It became known as the death blow to spiritualism. And
right.
they said that, you know, everyone, you know, everybody took a side. But in America, there were
hundreds and thousands of spiritualists. So, you know, it was just a handful of people that really truly believed that they faked it. They had the numbers behind them. And of course, you know, we fast forward to 1904 when both of the girls are gone. And, you know, there's children playing in the house and they found the bones of the peddler. So, you know, they couldn't have foreseen that.
Right. Well, I have to, we're going to have to go to a break. And I wanted to thank Tracy so much for coming on and talking with us and sharing some of the history with us. And, thank you very much, and we're going to go to a break, and don't go anywhere, Jeff, okay? We're going to come back and talk more about the book, okay?
Great, thanks so much. Thank you, Tracy.
You're welcome, thanks.
Five, four.
So I've done it again.
It's just become a thing now.
It is. It's all. It's part of the show, really, isn't it? So let's yes. try again. If we need to go this break.
The Radio Show is sponsored by Hellbound Books, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher along with links to all their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. Hellbound Books is proud to be the first in the indie publishing business with their very own app on both Google Play and the App Store. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out new erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com, and Xtina has an author page found on the Hellbound website. Don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media. Our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website at www.panicroomradio.com.
Stop! Welcome back to part two.
Well, indeed, welcome back to part two. Hopefully, Xtina's... Are you there, Xtina? Are you still with us?
I am. I didn't have to go get more wine this time because I just brought the whole bottle with me, so I am.
You just got
I'm
the
good.
Bottle, and you just... Yeah, I've just got this mental image of you. You sat there swigging it out of the bottle. It's and
I won't say that's wrong.
You know, it's funny. It saves on washing up, which is saving the planet one glass at a time, isn't it? Here's the funny. I just as an aside, working with one of our authors on a exciting new project. It's a dark. Erotic thriller romance type thing. I sent you over a copy of the cover. And it just occurred to me because I was liaising with the author, with the artist about the cover, and we were talking about, you know, butts and butt cracks, and because obviously you can't show butt crack, and side boobs and bras. And I said, do you really, in pretty much any other industry, if I'd had this conversation with you, you know, I'd be in the dock next to Harvey Weinstein. And we're just talking, and you know, and we're just, yeah, you know, it's too much butt crack on that. If we could do that, I'd make a butt bigger and, you know, cover up the part. It's funny, and the artist as well, you know, by the time we got the panties right on the girl on the front. He said, right, that's great. He said, now I have to go and explain to my wife why my browser history is full of butts and pants, you know. It's a bizarre world that we inhabit, you know. I mean, some of the things... I was obviously talking earlier with Jeff and Tracy. You know, the stuff we do sort of get immersed into. I mean, I think what fascinates me most about Jeff's book is that because it is rooted in real life. You know,
yeah.
I think it's why I like the you know, the Ed and Lorraine Warren based movies. I mean, some of them they're a bit hokey, some of them, and you get the jump scares and whatnot. But some of them, because they're rooted. I remember the Conjuring 2, which was about the Enfield haunting in London.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I remember that. I remember reading about that in the papers at the time. It was national news. You know, these girls who said, you know, there's ghosts and all the rest of it. So I think because there's that element of real lifeness to it, you know, it sort of adds to the story for me. Because,
exactly.
You know, you say it's sort of, I mean, even like my books, I mean, The Exorcist was based on a real life case of it. It was actually a young boy who was possessed by a demon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's just knowing that just adds to the creepiness of it. You know, it's like, maybe there's something in this. You know, but you know, reading Jeff's book. I mean, obviously, you know, the history of spiritualism, I guess, began with the Fox sisters. But some of the statistics Tracy was kicking out there was hundreds, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands across the nation. And again, I mean, I would guess the majority were, you know, con artists, I guess, were fakes.
Mm-hmm.
But it
only takes,
you know, a fraction of 1% to be genuine. And
mm-hmm.
you start thinking, well, maybe there's something in this, you know. And it's, I don't know. I think I've said before with the whole ghost thing, you know, that gets me is that people, I'm scared of ghosts, you know, but people should have, you know, people should be excited because it is sort of proof that there is something after death, you know?
That's true. Well, I wanted to, you know, talk more with Jeff about this subject, so I will
let's bring Jeff back and you can do just that. Okay.
Okay.
Let's bring Jeff
back.
Welcome back, Jeff. So you're on the spot now. I think Xtina wants to talk at you for a bit. So you just
put me on mute, right? Because I've been talking the last 2 minutes, but you just put me on
mute.
Oh, yeah. Should have mentioned that. Sorry about that.
I was just going to say real quick that I've been posting the last week different horror movies and books that are based on, you know, ghosts, like, you know, The Haunting, the movie, and The Haunting of Hill House, and so on, and all those books, and you can see them on my Facebook page, but none of those could be written without the Fox sisters, because they've all got, you know, what they believe they were experiencing, the rappings and so forth, and all those books, including The Exorcist, if you believe the true story or not about the boy, none of these could have been written without the Fox sisters. It's amazing, including The Conjuring, The Enfield Poltergeist, and everything else, and the Perrin family who was conjuring the first movie. So it all goes back to the Fox sisters. The Shining could not have been written without them, because they started the whole, you know, ghost movement and so on. So it's kind of fascinating. It all goes back to them.
Right, right. Well, now, I guess my question was, you know, I grew up in a spiritual household, religious household, there we go. You know, we were Baptist, and, you know, we didn't really believe in ghosts or anything. Now, I had my own personal experiences in the house, and I know how, you know, scared I was and everything, and then hearing all the history behind the Fox sisters' house, you know, so... I guess my question is, do you believe, it was ghosts, or it was spirits, or, you know, demons even? What is your take on you know, what was going on in the house?
I don't believe any of it, unfortunately.
I was terrified, yeah. No, see, and that's, you know, growing up as a, you know, as a Christian and not believing in ghosts, the thought that it was a demon terrified me even more. So, you know, what James was saying about, you know, it should be almost like a comfort if that there was something, you know, after death or whatever, it wasn't for me. For me, it was, oh my God, there's a freaking demon. It's going to attach itself to me and come home with me. You know, I was talking to the lady who was I call her the lady because she used to babysit me, the one who I went into the house with when I was 15. And she said that she went into it again a few years later with some other friends of hers, and that somebody took home some books with him. And then the very next day he went back to the house and returned them. And, you know, I was asking her why he did that, and she said, you know, just that he just had a horrible feeling, you know, after he took the books and went home, he just had this horrible feeling and had to, you know, bring them back the next day. And, you know, even though I can explain away, you know, when I was in the house and, you know, noises, because, you know, everything around me had been burned, and it was on the ground, and it was just, you know, there was a sign on the door that said condemned. We had to get in through these, the doors were chained up, so we had to squeeze through, you know, and the doors and stuff. So we should not have been in there. So, you know, who knows if the place was just falling apart as we were in it. So that could have very well explained away any sounds that we heard. But, you know, just the feeling of, I want to say the feeling of dread that overcame me when I was inside there, and just the feeling of, I have to get out of here. Something is not right here, you know. So for you to say, you know, you don't believe any of it.
Well, the thing is, when they were making The Shining and Stanley Kubrick and Stephen King were talking about it, and Kubrick said he thinks horror movies or movies about ghosts are always very hopeful because it does prove there's an afterlife.
Yeah,
and that was
which
is an interesting thought, those two discussing it. My point is, as I researched this book, and Tracy brought this up, that at one point later in their life, Maggie got up and she said the whole thing was made up. She said that we made the rapping noises by cracking our toes and our ankle joints, and we had an apple attached to a string, and we dragged it up and down so it would bounce in the house and make those sounds. So you look deeper and deeper into it, and then after they recanted it and said it was false, then they went back and they said, no, it was true, because they were obviously making money off it, giving seances and so forth. And the entire spiritualist community, or most of them, turned their back on the sisters because they said, well, if you're going to deny all this, you know, we don't want to support you anymore. And I did not include the peddler in the book at all, because I thought it was too much information. But also, when they dug up and found those bones, they thought it was some kids, because it was animal bones, chicken bones. There was never real evidence that it was a human skeleton. So I tried to keep all the facts in the story and then present both sides of it as the characters go through it, So the reader has to kind of decide, you know, did this really happen or was it fake and so on. So I try to keep everybody guessing.
Well, I guess with what Tracy was saying about the fact that this was something they didn't want, and their, you know, their mother or whatever prayed that, you know, they would, you know, this would be taken from them. Perhaps would they recant the story? It could have been for that reason they didn't want the publicity. That I guess that was a possibility.
Well, it was later in their life, and so they were kind of exhausted because think about it. I just call it tugging. People were constantly tugging. Oh, come to my house and see if you hear, you know, the ghost speaking or the spirit speaking,
right,
you know, at my house. And it was this constant, you know, tugging on them. And then their oldest sister, Leah, got involved, and she kind of became their manager. And so she was constantly, quote, booking them all over the place. So it got to be exhausting. And, you know, so that I understand where they would say, you know what, I've had enough. I want to get out of this. So.
Right, right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your book, The Children of Hydesville?
Well, I came across the Fox sisters many years ago, before the Internet, believe it or not, if that's even possible. And I have a book called Hear Mr. Splitfoot I bought, which is about spiritualism, and another book called The Supernatural. And there was that famous photo that we adapted for the cover of the book of the three sisters. And it's just amazing because I thought it was such a disturbing photo, even though it was a common photo back in the, you know, mid-1800s. But I really found it kind of disturbing. I thought, who are these women? So I read about it in a few books I got and kind of began to think about a story a long time ago and worked up some ideas for it. And then once the Internet came around, you know, it was kind of all over the place. If you Google the Fox sisters, you'll be amazed at all the things that come up.
You're
and
right.
I saw a picture, I found a picture of that scary cottage.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, my gosh, this is like the perfect ghost story. And so I wrote it and worked on it. And I have a publisher friend also from the UK. And I worked up a first draft. And I couldn't stop. I wanted to write a sequel to it. And he said, well, you know what? Your first draft is a little too short to be a novel. So I said, okay. And I said, but I've already started a sequel because I can't stop writing about it. I was so obsessed with this. So I wrote the sequel, combined the two together, and revised it, and then sent it out to James. And I still find them fascinating. And I still find the idea that, you know, some believe and some don't believe, you know, interesting, because all that documentation's out there. And then also the idea, like you brought up, that the house was burned down twice. And
yeah,
both times
yeah.
It was like an accident, but I find it so strange. And when John Drummond, I think he spent at least a decade or longer, kind of with his own funds, was so obsessed to rebuild the house, and then it burns down again for the second time. So there's something about them and the house and the cottage and everything else I just couldn't let go of. So I just had to write it. And I had some writer friends read it and wrote some great blurbs about it. And it's getting some terrific reviews online. So I'm just so happy that, you know, Hellbound chose to publish it. Thank you, James.
Yeah.
You are welcome, sir. No, thank you. Thank you for thinking of us. You know, it's a beaut. I mean, it's a beast of a book. I mean, but some of Stephen King's, it's a shame, but it's so incredibly well written. And like you said, I was saying, you know, before we I remember to unmute you, you know, that because it is rooted in fact, and the fact that it, you know, is the beginning, as I said, the beginning of the history of spiritualism, that makes it all the more poignant.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that's what sort of certainly reached out to me. Because I say, I mean, I it's funny because my little girl, she loves the jump scare movies, you know, the Conjuring and all the Ed and Lorraine Warrens, all that, loves those to bits, Annabelle and you name it. So I've been watching a lot of those recently, as you can imagine. you know, and you say without, you know, the Fox sisters, none of that would have happened.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
I mean, obviously, you've done the research, Jeff. Obviously, researched it a lot more than I have. But, you know, as I said, I mean, the statistics that Tracy was throwing out, I mean, out of those tens of thousands, I mean, do you have any idea how many are likely to be genuine?
Of the experiences? Actually, I'm sorry. But,
no.
yeah, there's really, you know, from Amityville, you know, all down the line, most of them, once you look closer, there's really nothing there. And the odd thing is, like you were saying earlier, Tina, you know, you feel creepy.
Yes.
And that's not really, yeah. And yet people jump right to a ghost. And take another, there's an old saying, you can never argue with a person with an experience.
Yeah.
So I never
want
to tell somebody, well, that's not true. It's like, you know what, you felt something, but now they know, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why, you know, chemically, like you go to an old deserted house, there's going to be all sorts of you know, fungi on the walls that you inhale that can be hallucinogenic, amplified sounds, and all this kind of stuff. So, again, taking nothing away from the people that want to believe that, but people always immediately jump to ghosts, you know, a door.
They can explain it, definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they jump right to that. And there's a great book, James, that you would love called Will Storr, Storr, versus the Supernatural.
Uh-huh.
And it's nonfiction, and he's a Brit, and he goes through about 14 chapters, and he goes to haunted places throughout the U.S. and the U.K. And
oh,
it's
wow.
It's a terrifying book. So it's Will Storr, Storr, versus the Supernatural.
Sorry, I'm writing this down. Storr, yeah?
Versus the Supernatural. And it's the scariest book I've ever read because he's a skeptic. And he actually interviewed the daughter of the Enfield poltergeist.
Oh, wow.
This was a few years ago. But the first interview was done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a great book. It's very funny and also very terrifying. There's one chapter in particular that when I first read it, I just couldn't believe how scary it was. So I always tell people it's the scariest book I've ever read. So I highly recommend that book.
Wow, I've made a note. I will dig that out. I will get that. That sounds right
that's
up my street, that. Yeah.
I would tell you I would get it, but it would probably scare the crap out of me, so I might not. Because,
well,
you know,
I'll read it, Xtina, and tell you all about it.
Okay.
How's that?
Okay, because when I was reading The Children of Hydesville, you know, and he is describing, you know, things inside, you know, the cottage, I was just remembering it being in there, you know, and it was even more terrifying. Yeah, yeah.
I'm so jealous. I really am that you've actually, you know, that is a your path has sort of touched upon this, and it's like,
yeah,
I love that. I love that.
I would love Jeff to read for us an excerpt of Children of Hydesville. Do you have one ready for us?
Yeah, I also wanted just to thank Tracy again because being in New York, this is way past our bedtime.
I know,
but,
it is.
It's great. I just wanted to thank her, though. And also, for listeners to know more about what she's doing on Facebook, if you just put in Hydesville Memorial Park, the Fox Sisters, you'll come up to a site, and there's a huge photograph on the opening page of the cottage. So you can see that, and you can see the work she's doing, and there's actual photographs of the memorial she's done up there. And it's just amazing what she's done. There's some videos also. So I just encourage people to visit that site. And again, just type in the Fox Sisters and it'll come up. So it's the Hydesville Memorial Park. Great site and great work she's doing up there to kind of, you know, keep and capture that important part of history. For the Children of Hydesville, I'm just going to read it's a short section. It's the prologue of the book. And without naming names or the location, this introduces the reader to a man who is setting a house on fire. And as it begins to collapse around him, he hears voices of children calling out to him from the basement. And as the reader will find out at the end of part one, The Children of Hydesville, the man is our protagonist. His name is Derek David, and he's burning down the Fox Cottage. And since this novel is fiction, I decided to keep the cottage up and running in Hydesville, because it's kind of a spiritual center in that area, and a big colony for psychically gifted children was built there. So he's trying to burn down the Fox Cottage as Maggie and Katie Fox call out to him, trying to distract him. So again, when the reader begins the book, he doesn't know who these people are or what's going on, and it starts like this. The cottage caught fire faster than he expected. He had assumed it would defy him, but he had no trouble lighting the matches. No sudden drafts appeared to extinguish the flames, and the old clothes he had set alight in the second floor bedrooms had offered no resistance. Come down here. We have more to show you. He glanced at the cellar door. It was a trick. Nothing to see down there anymore. Do we have to come up there and get you? After a moment, a heavy footstep, then another. Even over the gathering roar of the fire, he could hear the sounds of the girl slowly clumping up the steps. But it was just a distraction. He needed to stay focused. Smoke from upstairs was now beginning to push its way into the first floor. He could hear the hungry crackle as the teeth of the fire consumed all in its path. He envisioned a lawnmower aflame, the blades greedily chewing up the second floor. He was certain the fire could be seen from outside by now, but there would be no fire trucks to the rescue, no ambulance, no gawking neighbors. No one lived in Hydesville anymore, and even though he stood firmly and solidly on the landing of the Fox House, he wasn't fully persuaded the floorboards or the town even existed. Like waking from a dream, too often they had simply evaporated from his mind, from history, from maps, GPS systems. The noises from the cellar were now a thick and menacing chorus. The children's call to him reverberated through that walls, cut through the flickering snarl of flames. Open up. We have something to show you. The basement door handle rattled. It was like they were on some film loop or were hosting a residual haunting, simply repeating themselves. I've already heard the joke, he thought to himself. I know the punchline. Go away, he finally shouted, couldn't help himself. Overhead, a crash, followed by a muffled whoosh as the flames found something new to devour. Thick gray clouds were now rapidly billowing down the stairwell like huge tumbleweeds. He was sweating from the stifling heat. The house seemed to be closing in around him. He started coughing. His chest was tight. He began gasping for air. The old property was now an inferno. The kitchen ceiling to his right blasted open as the second-story storeroom crashed into it. The tremendous pressure of the fire shattered windows. The place was collapsing around him. The walls trembled, split. And then the reader begins the story proper to find out who that man was and why he ended up burning down that cottage and so on.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yep.
Brilliant start.
I have to say, I think you are a wonderful storyteller, a great writer. I loved everything about this book. I really did. It was so good. And I have to ask, you know, because when you're just reading, sometimes you don't always pronounce things correctly. So was it Vanya? Is that how you say her name, Vanya?
I just call it Vanya. That's just
Vanya. Okay, I was close.
Yeah, very close. Yeah.
I did always want to know that. That was awesome. So what are you working on now?
Well, I was laughing when you had the introduction to the show because you're both talking about drinking, watching TV, catching up on movies. I'm finishing up a third novel that I hope James will like, called I Ride a Pale Horse, which is in the kind of vein of the second book he's publishing called I'll Come Back to Get You, which is coming out late 2018, which is more of kind of a Nicky French suspense novel. And then this one that I just finished about a month ago, I'm now revising, is based on the premise that what if the books that we read begin to have an influence in our life? In other words, if you like reading romance novels, someone that you know are going to fall in love with shows up in your life. If you like reading mysteries, a mystery begins to involve coming to your life.
Oh, wow.
If you like reading porn and extreme violent books, those kind of experiences come into your life. And so I'm working on that right now. It's called I Ride a Pale Horse, and it involves a serial killer from 20 years ago that is also kind of brought back to life based on these different characters in the books they're reading. So I was working all week while you guys were having a good time.
Oh, you know, I feel bad now. So when you send that book in to me, Jeff, I'm going to feel, oh, poor old Jay, I've been living it up, and he's been slogging away at this, but I'm going to feel terrible.
Exactly. You're watching movies, laughing, and you know. Well,
you know,
got a straw and a bottle of wine. So what are you gonna do?
Well, you know, we were saying earlier, you know, about you know the sort of bizarre world that we sort of writers and creative people live in. That I can actually justify, you know, watching a movie in the middle of the day and call it research. And it's, I love that. I love that. I can sit and read a book, you know, for a day or half a day, whatever, and I'm research.
Right.
This is research. This. Great.
This is awesome. So from now on, James, when you ask me what I'm working on, I'm going to tell you research.
Yeah, but to be fair, Xtina, sleeping isn't really research unless you're writing the definitive novel about, you know, sleeping. It doesn't count. I'm sorry. No, sleeping is not. No.
Man.
No, you're pushing it. You're pushing it a bit there.
Sleeping and drinking wine. I could write a book about that. I could. I have a bunch of experience. We write
wine
what
tasting.
We know, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the problem with your show today is that you know you can't write what you know because you're sleeping.
Or
you
drunk.
See
yeah,
how
I
it,
know.
Or drunk. So you see how it starts
sure
to crumble a bit at the edges. But then again,
hey, James,
I mean, look at... Yep.
James, I was wondering, what's your, if you had to pick one, what's your favorite, you know, scary film that you've seen recently in the last few years?
Oh, I would say, and I've mentioned this before, well, there's two, I would say. One was a great independent movie, Yellow Brick Road, which
yes,
is one of those movies that just gets in your head and sticks, and I love that. You know, so many movies these days just... You watch them and you forgot them, you know. But before the end credits are finished, you forget what's happened. The other one, probably a more recent one, was The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yeah, that was great.
I mean, it had Brian Cox in it. I'm obviously a big fan of Brian Cox. But it was because it was so different. It was so tight, so claustrophobic, so brilliantly done. And it was different. It was unique. And you know,
right.
So I mean, how about you, Jeff? I mean, have you seen anything that you would recommend recently?
Yeah, the one I was going to mention that I keep telling everybody about is a film, again, a British film.
Yay!
It's called The Unfolding.
Do you know, I don't know that one. The Unfolding.
Yeah, The Unfolding, and it's brilliant, as the Brits say, and it's just about people investigating a haunted house, but the background is the world is kind of falling into nuclear war. So there's this tension outside of the house and the tension inside the house, and it's scary and it's so well done. So I really recommend The Unfolding. I've been raving about it for years. And one other quick thing, you asked about how many of these stories are real.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed and Lorraine Warren, which we've all heard about, they did a story, a haunting called In a Dark Place, which was made into the film A Haunting in Connecticut. And they worked on the book with the author, Ray Garten. And I read it years ago. It's a great, scary book. And I know Ray on Facebook. And so I just asked him after I posted about the book this week, because, again, it's very much like the Fox Sisters. And so I asked him on Facebook, was the book true? And he said, no, it was not a true story. Like all of Ed and Lorraine Warren's cases, it was a complete fraud. I was told to make it up and make it scary. So, you know, unfortunately, another hope, as we know, pretty much everything with Ed and Lorraine Warren were that way.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Kennedy, do you have a favorite film that you like that you think is scary, or do you watch those that much?
I watch them, but, well, you know, always with a healthy skepticism, I think. I'm one of these people that would... I would like to, because of the world we inhabit, you know, we write about these things. I would love to see some proof, some absolute concrete proof that, for myself, that this is, you know, I think we've all had the odd little experience that sort of made us think, and I've had a couple in my lifetime, but, you know, I don't know. I'd just like to see some concrete proof, you know, and I think that would be... That would be pretty cool. Even whether it's, you know, demons or devils or ghosts or whatever, I just want to see something, you know. But I enjoy the movies. I really do. I love it. I grew up watching the again Brit films, the Hammer horror films as a kid.
Yeah.
So I have an ingrained love of horror movies, good and bad.
Same here.
I hate to say that we are out of time. We have.
Oh, no.
I'm going to get with you. I know we are going to get with you, Jeff, and have you come back for an entire show again. And I think it'd be great just to talk about scary movies and scary books, and you know we would have a great time. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and we have all of your links put up on the Panic Room Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk you, they can go there and do it, and the links to the book are up there too. So again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I can't wait to have you back.
Right. Yeah, it's been
so
an absolute, absolute pleasure,
it.
Jeff. No, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. And we just look forward to talking to you again very well. I mean, with all the books you're bringing out, we're going to have you on every other week, I think, which would be great. we'll change it to the Jeff C. Stevenson Show. I think that's got a great ring to it. I love that. So that's brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. It's been so
terrific.
Much fun. And thank you
thank
for Tracy
you
if she's
appreciate
still
it.
Listening.
Okay,
and
great. I'll reach out to her.
Okay. I'm afraid
bye-bye.
It's
thank you.
That. Goodbye. Goodbye, Jeff. It is that time when we have to say goodbye. Good night, Xtina.
Good night, Xtina.
Give me the truth now.